Hey everyone, check out our new website at risingmoonglobal.com. You'll be able to find all the latest podcast episodes, news, and Rising Moon merch, which includes Rising Moon holographic stickers and Rising Moon customizable tumblers. Welcome everyone to another episode of Rising Moon Podcast. It is your host Chris and my co-host Amanda. And we have a very special guest today. We have Venus Envy. Welcome to the show, Venus.
Thank you.
So, Envy, please give us an introduction and background about yourself.
My name is Venus Envy. I am something years old, and I live in Orlando, Florida. I've been doing drag for about 6 years now, well, a little over 6 years now, and I am probably best known for my makeup close-ups that I post on Instagram and for my TikTok videos.
Yeah, I checked out more of your videos on TikTok. I was like, damn, your makeup is on point.
Thank you.
Especially when you can do close-ups and it's still on point. It's
so good.
That's what means it's good. Damn.
Yeah, that's actually part of why I started posting the close-ups, because a lot of people would ask me for tutorials, and I can't really do tutorials because I don't like to show my face out of drag.
Yeah.
But the way I learn is I can kind of just look at a picture and do it. So I was like, oh, if I can give them like a close-up image where they can see all the little lines, all the details, mm-hmm. and I give the list of products, that's the same thing, right? And that was kind of like my goal in doing it.
Mm-hmm. And it's been working out, so that's good. That's awesome. You found a solution.
Because usually it's the eyes and the lips.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only recently started posting the lip ones. Yeah. I admittedly have to do a lot of editing on those to get rid of my acne and the smile lines and the creases. My eyes use barely any editing, but the lips definitely. Yeah.
How long does it take you?
To edit my photos?
Yes. Yeah.
Not long. I'd say I probably spend, like, a couple minutes on an eye just to, like, crop it and everything. And, like, I have to get rid of, like, when the flash bounces off the black, I have to redarken it. Sometimes I'll have, like, veins in my eyes where I'm like, oh, that's disturbing. Let me just remove that so no one has to look at it. Just little things like that. The lips, I would say, take, like, 10 to 15 minutes to edit everything out that I want out.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice.
All right. So, getting into it, what does being asexual mean to you personally?
So, asexual means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and asexuality as an identity is on a spectrum. But for me personally, asexual means not experiencing sexual attraction. At least that's what it means for me personally. I can still experience romantic attraction. I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm aromantic, but it's very rare for me to experience that type of attraction to anybody. And then even when I do, it's hard for me to differentiate between romantic attraction, friend, like, platonic attraction, and, oh, they're so pretty, I want to be them. Like, it's very hard for me to differentiate mm-hmm. the different types of attraction without that sexual factor in it, which is why I kind of just say asexual, and I very rarely describe my romantic attraction.
Mm. So what does that mean to your dating life? Like, how hard is it to tell someone about your specifics as being an asexual?
I wouldn't really say that it impacts my dating life, because in order for it to impact my dating life, I would have to have a dating life.
Yeah.
I've never been in a relationship in my whole life, mm-hmm. and the last time I went on a date, I was maybe 18 years old, so we're talking over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's not really something I have to deal with, because I just don't pursue romantic relationships like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. What would you say some common, like, misconceptions about asexual people that you've experienced or your friends?
Probably the number one biggest misconception about asexuals that I've heard is oh, you're only identifying as asexual because you can't get it. You can't get anyone. No one wants to date you. And
yeah, you're like, look at me.
Totally hot. So obviously, I get propositioned for sex quite often, and I do get propositioned for dates quite often, and it can be a little bit awkward turning people down. I don't usually even bother to tell them I'm asexual. I just turn them down because I don't feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's absolutely not the case. I know very many asexual people, and all of them are objectively quite attractive and have lovely personalities. So that's just not simply not the case. Yeah. The other misconception that I hear sometimes, a lot of the time, from people within the LGBTQ community is that asexuality is just a type of spicy straight. Like, it's not really like an LGBTQ identity, but it is. If you look at the acronym, it's the A. The A does not stand for ally. And in addition to that, it's an orientation. It has a coming out process. There's a whole process of self-realization that goes with it. I'm not going to sit here and say, as an asexual, I experience the same discrimination that everyone else does. No, I don't. But it's not just about who's the most discriminated against. It's about the process of realizing this about yourself, coming to terms with this about yourself, and ultimately accepting it about yourself.
I think that's where, like you said, everyone tries to compare each other, where it just gets out of hand.
Yeah.
Now, Venus, as an advocate for the LGBTQA+ rights, what changes would you like to see in Florida or the U.S. as a whole?
Well, obviously the same changes that I'd like to see in Florida, I'd like to see in the U.S. as a whole. But as we've seen in recent months, Florida seems to be just a little bit behind the rest of the U.S. So I'll just start with that. As a not-so-proud Floridian, yes, I live here. No, it's not on purpose. The whole don't say gay bill as it applies to schools is just absolutely heinous, unnecessary, and a huge step backward when it comes to LGBTQ acceptance. LGBTQ plus youth have the highest rate of suicide attempts and suicide completions among school students. They also experience a disproportionate amount of bullying, and legislation like this is only serving to increase those numbers, to further those statistics, and to send a message to LGBTQ kids, like, you know, you're not valid. We don't see you. We're going to pretend we don't see you. We don't agree with you. We don't want you here. And I know that the bill is not geared toward students. It's geared toward the schools. Mm-hmm. It's sending the message to the students regardless. And as it pertains to the schools, you know, Florida schools, they're already not great. So why are you trying to drive people out? Why are you trying to make it so LGBTQ people who work in the profession no longer feel comfortable in the profession? Mm-hmm. There is such a shortage of teachers and all school staff. And I don't know if this is for everywhere, but it is certainly the case in Florida from what I've heard.
Yeah, it is.
Everywhere. Yeah. Yeah, it's such an unnecessary piece of legislation that was purely put out so our governor could try and, like, secure the bag with the Republican Party, and it's just... I could talk more about it, but I won't.
I remember first hearing about it. Like, I thought at first it was a joke because I was like, is this a real thing? But then I saw it was in Florida, and I was like, oh, God, no. Like, just to think of the kids, like, now that have to deal with it, you know, versus when it wasn't a bill.
Just like the fact of being possibly forcibly outed is terrifying enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not fair to the kids at all. Like, they are dealing with enough. Mm-hmm. Like, they're dealing with enough with the education system as it is, with standardized testing the way it is, with the pandemic how it is. Why are we giving kids another thing to stress about? Why can we not just let them be kids? Which seems like the whole point of the bill that they're trying to push is that they just want kids to be kids. Let them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, back to your drag, what made you want to venture into the world of drag?
I've always loved the art of drag. I don't remember when exactly or how exactly I first learned about drag and what it was, but I do remember being like 15, 16, trying to like look up drag shows online because I was too young to see them in person, and just consuming all the drag media I possibly could, like Party Monster, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, the documentary Pageant. These are all like some of my early exposures to drag, but I sought them out. So like, obviously I knew about it in advance. I don't know. I always loved it, but it wasn't until I was 18 and I started actually going out to clubs in Orlando and experiencing drag in real life because I was finally old enough. That was when I realized for the first time that drag is more than one thing. You can be a drag queen, you can be a drag king, but you're not limited to only one of those two boxes, and you're certainly not limited to one of those two boxes by your gender. So it was really seeing the diversity in Orlando's drag scene with all of the beautiful trans women who do drag here, with all of the club kids like Etana Gemini, with all of the male entertainers like Axel Andrews, that I realized for the first time, oh, I can actually be a drag queen even though I'm a woman. And that was actually when I first started pursuing it, was when I was 18. I definitely got a little bit of flack online because Tumblr was my main, like, social network at that time. It was a social network that I was popular on way back in the day. And because of the flack that I got for wanting to do drag, I put it down and didn't pick it back up again until I was 23. So that was kind of, like, my introduction to it. I always wanted to. I just didn't know I could.
How did your family respond to you getting into drag?
Well, I didn't tell them right away. At the time I had started drag, like, picked it back up again and actually pursued it actively, I was 23, so this would have been when I was in graduate school.
Oh, okay.
And my parents already knew I worked at the nightclubs. I was a VIP hostess and a cocktail server at the time, and they didn't necessarily like it because they didn't think that nightclubs were like the most safe place, but I had proven that, like, you know, I can go to school during the day and I can work nights and I can maintain a 4.0 GPA and I can make my own money. And I kind of like had proved it to them over time that I was capable of doing that. So I felt comfortable to show them my drag after I had been doing it for like a couple months. And I did it by showing them my first performance. My parents knew that I loved drag and that a lot of my friends were drag entertainers. So I would always, like, when I see them, I would show them, like, videos of my friends on my phone. And they'd be so happy because I was the person who took the videos at the time. And one day I was showing them videos of my friends and I slipped a video of my first drag performance in there to see if they would, like, notice that it was me. And I don't think my dad did, but my mom noticed immediately. And I was like, yeah. And then I remember her being annoyed that the song used the word pussy. She was like, say that. And I was like, why can't I say the word pussy? I'm 23 years old. But
she's like, you're my little baby.
That was kind of her initial, like, reaction was, you can't say that word. You're not wearing any pants in this video. But, you know, I wouldn't say they were against it, but it was kind of that whole, you're supposed to be here so you can go to school, so you can get a job. Don't go out and start doing things that are going to jeopardize your chances of getting a good professional job in the future. And that was kind of like the initial response. And I think it was partially because they didn't fully understand what I was doing. And I think it was also maybe just the shock of seeing me on a stage collecting dollar bills from an audience wearing a bodysuit and thigh-high boots. I get it. Perhaps that was not the video to use as my first introduction.
They're like, this is one step before stripper.
It was my first drag performance. It was the only video I had. So in retrospect, perhaps I should have waited until I had a more, like, performance to show. But that being said, although they weren't initially super thrilled with it, I wouldn't say that they were actively against it, maybe in private, just not to my face. But now that I've been doing it for a long time, and that once again, I've been able to prove to them, yes, I can do drag. Yes, I can have a full-time job. No, I have not been fired for my drag yet. And some people get the reference, some people won't. And like, yes, I'm actually good at it, and this is something I really enjoy, and I'm making a name for myself. Now they're actually, like, super proud of it, and they actually, like, love it. I found out, like, about a year ago that my dad shows pictures of me in drag to his coworkers and brags about it. Because he's a dad, so he doesn't usually, like, you know, show emotions. Yeah. So that was cool to find out. My mom's, like, my number one fan. And my brother and sister, actually, also both do drag now. So, you know, I have now effectively poisoned their entire crop.
Yeah, like I need to poison. So you said your parents have gone to a show, right?
My dad has never seen me perform, but my mom has gone to a few of my shows. I can think of like 3 or 4 times that she has come out to Orlando to see me perform. Oh. Or for me in like a neighboring city, she'd come out and see me. I am booked to perform at Fort Lauderdale toward the end of June, and my parents only live about like within an hour from Fort Lauderdale, this is a daytime show, which also is like the deciding factor, is that this takes place kind of during like the early evening. Mm. So I'm pretty sure my dad is going to see me perform for the very first time at this
show. Wow. That's awesome. How did that make you feel the very first time that your mom first came to see your drag show?
The very first time that she came to see a show of mine was, oh gosh, I can't think of the name of the city now because I'd only been there like the one time. I want to say this city was somewhere between where my parents live and where I live. So, like, I lived 3 hours from my parents. This was maybe an hour and a half from each of us. Mm-hmm. But it was shortly after Pulse happened. It was a performance and fundraiser featuring a bunch of the queens from Pulse. And that was the first time my mom had ever come out to see me. As far as I can remember, there might have been one time before that, but I think that was the first time. Mm-hmm. And it was just really, like, nice to have her there, and it made me really happy.
Nice. That's always awesome. And now your dad gonna see you.
And my God, I have to plan this performance carefully.
Yeah, I bet.
Real awkward.
You're just like, wait, Dad, it's gonna be all 3 of us on stage at some point. It'll be a family show.
I think my brother and sister have each only performed like once. I think they've each only done like their debut performance. But me and my sister have dragged together several times in the past. Oh. We even have a name for ourselves. We are the Freud sisters.
Nice.
Venus and Oedipus. Yes,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's Venus Envy and Oedipus, and we are the Freud sisters.
That's wonderful. I really hope people get the reference.
I hope we do too, but I also always find it funny when people don't think my drag name is a pun. Because if you don't realize it's a pun, it's just like literally the most basic drag name ever. Like, yeah.
So, how would you describe your drag?
Describe my drag. I don't know. I always like struggle to answer this question because I just like immediately my mind goes to like how all these people describe their drag. Like, I'm like a living Bratz doll. I'm just that bitch. You never know what's gonna come out of my mouth. I can be your best friend or your worst nightmare. Like, that's just like the first thing that comes to mind.
That was so good.
If I had to describe,
I was just if waiting I was for just... like, am I the drama?
Drama. No, I would describe drag probably as, I like the word glam. Like, it's the combination of like glamour and camp. I like to look very put together and polished in my drag, but my favorite numbers that I do are when I just get up on that stage and do the stupidest thing I can think of. So I would say that's like how I would describe my drag, but I've definitely also taken a little bit more of like an alternative turn with my drag over the past like couple years, just because I am an alternative person out of drag. So at first I would try to make my drag persona very, like, you know, pink, pastel, rainbows, glitter, because I wanted that transformation. I wanted that opposite persona. But now I just kind of am going back to my roots, performing the music I actually listen to, wearing the clothes I actually enjoy wearing, and that is how you get this.
Your Beetlejuice is, like, one of my favorite things in this world.
Thank you. I'm actually accidentally Beetlejuice right now.
Yeah,
I was not even trying to be Beetlejuice. I'm hosting Horror Movie Bingo, so I was definitely going for a little bit of, like, a horror look, but I started out with Elvira in mind and ended up Beetlejuice.
Yeah. It's great.
What would you say drag in general means to you?
I have always described drag as the artistic expression of gender. And the reason I describe it that way is because drag, first and foremost, to me, is an art form. It's not just a look, it's not just performance, it's not just the combination of those two things. It's just, it's art in general, and that art can be different things for different people. And then I do think that whether you are altering your gender for drag or not, I do think that drag is an expression of gender. And for me personally, as a woman who does drag as a female or feminine drag persona, to me, it's sort of the reclaiming of that and expressing femininity the way I want to express femininity in a society that, from, like, the time girls are born, is telling you how to be feminine, how not to be feminine, you know, don't be a prude, but don't be a slut, you can't be stupid, but you can't be too smart. Like, it's just very that. Yeah. So I do consider that what I do in drag to be subversive, despite the fact that I'm not altering my gender between me and my drag persona. It's still an expression of the gender.
Definitely.
Would you ever consider auditioning for a drag show? And if so, which one?
I may or may not have considered auditioning for drag shows in the past, and I may or may not have auditioned for a drag show in the past, and I may or may not have considered auditioning for the other popular drag show as well. But as of right now, I have only auditioned for one of them, and I'm kind of waiting to see how things go with the other before I decide if I want to audition or not.
Nice. So, we already talked a little bit about your name, but how did you come up with your name?
So, I came up with my name, this is actually not my original drag name, but my original drag name, A, I found out was problematic after I had been using it for about a year, and B, was part of a house that I'm no longer part of, so when I changed my drag name to this, I was like, okay, I need to come up with something perfect that's going to be my forever name, because I am not changing this again, I am not changing all my social media over again. So I had, like, a list of names, and about half of them were puns, half of them were not. I knew I wanted a pun for a name, but it's so hard to come up with, like, puns that are actually funny and have not been done before.
Yeah.
And one of the names I had written down for a first name was Venus, because at this time, Art Pop had, like, either just come out or had come out, was, like, either way, it was her most recent album, and I was obsessed with Lady Gaga. And I had actually gone through all of Lady Gaga's songs and jotted down potential first names that come from her songs. And Venus was one that stood out to me as, like, yes, this is a name. I know people with this name. And in addition to that, I realized as I was going through the list, this name rhymes with penis. That has potential. And I was a psychology major around the time that I started drag and when I was doing drag. So I was like, okay, what pun can I make that uses Venus as the first name, that's a joke to do with penis? And originally I was trying to think of, like, a play on the fact that I do not have a penis. And that's how I came up with Venus Envy, because Sigmund Freud is kind of like a meme among psychology majors as it is. And I was like, yep, this is it. This is the name. This is the one.
He is notorious because he's just like, everything comes back to penis. Everything comes back to desire.
Everything is sexual.
Exactly.
And not only sexual, but it's incestual. And it's like, okay,
quite. You're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Projecting a little bit.
Yes, very much so.
So you mentioned previously that you were in a house. How important do you think that plays in a role as, like, being in a house? Or I don't know about, like, a role, but the importance of it.
Do you think it's helpful or, mm-hmm. or not?
Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't say that.
So I definitely do think that being a part of a house or a drag family is extremely helpful, especially when you're first starting out with drag. But I also think that it's important that you don't just rush into a drag family or rush into a house just because you want the name or just because you want to be a part of one. Actually take the time to scope out each house, what they stand for, what they do, who's a part of it, and ask yourself why you want to be a part of this family. So when I first started drag, I was a part of the House of Gemini here in Orlando. And the reason I chose the House of Gemini was because they were known for doing more of like a club kid style of drag. The House Mother Katana Gemini was an absolute sweetheart. She helped me get my first job in the clubs. I had a great friendship with her. I still have a good friendship with her. And I joined the house because I wanted to be her child and because she was someone who really embraced me in the beginning, never made me feel weird about my gender or different. And I really liked the diversity of the house because it wasn't just drag. It was photographers and bartenders, promoters, backup dancers. And at the time I joined the house, I didn't do drag. I was kind of like the person who helped run charity events and did a lot of charity stuff in the community. So that's why I chose that family. And I was a part of that family for 5 years. I would say of the 5 years I was in that house, I was only doing drag for like one of those years. Wow. But being a part of the house kind of like made me feel like I was accepted, like I was welcome here, like I was allowed to participate in this culture. And that's kind of what it meant for me. And then over time, people left the house, people moved away, more people came in, and it just kind of reached a point where I realized none of the people who were a part of this house are still currently a part of it. And this family that exists now is not the same family that I started with. And that's what ultimately made me decide to leave, was because I realized, you know, I don't necessarily identify as much with this family anymore. It's not what it was before. Mm-hmm. And I left and started my own thing. And then a few years into me being Venus Envy, I was adopted by Danielle Hunter. I don't use the last name Hunter. I do have permission to use it. She originally said you have to win a pageant first, but after coming in first alternate so many times, she said, you know what, just have it. Nice. But I don't use the name Hunter because I had already been Venus Envy for several years before I was accepted into that house. And although Hunter is a legendary name, I did not join just for the name. I joined because I love Danielle. She's one of the first drag entertainers I ever saw. And she is really one of the people who showed me that women can do drag. So I consider that my drag family. I still consider all the original members of the House of Gemini to be my drag family, wherever they are now. I consider my best friends to be my drag family. I consider Hell House to be my drag family. And I think that over the years, I've realized that being in a house is not meant to be something that limits you. Your family is, you'll know who's your family and who's not.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool, because I would think that some people assume being in a drag family, you have to do drag, you know, but that's actually really cool that you essentially did drag for only a year out of your 5 year tenure at the house, which is really cool.
It does seem like it comes with sometimes a little bit of a challenge, because like if you're part of a house and you're someone's drag daughter and they're like really good, mm-hmm. you have some high expectations put on you because that's your drag mom.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's why I'm kind of happy that I have Danielle as a drag mom, because although she is this amazing, gorgeous, talented pageant individual who's won every single title imaginable, I will never be on her level when it comes to pageantry. But outside of the fact that we both do pageants, we have absolutely nothing in common with our drag, so it's not a competition.
You do have a crown now, though. I saw that.
I do have a crown. I am your current reigning Miss Lady Comedy Queen.
Ooh, yeah.
Now, I do have a question regarding a house. What would you say... I was think that maybe you've seen, like, bad, like, houses. What would you say are some red flags to not join a house?
So, some red flags that I would say to not joining a house. If you are a brand new drag entertainer just starting out, you just put on, like, your first performance at the club, everyone's super impressed with how well you did, you went out there and killed it, and all of a sudden everyone's trying to recruit you into their house. That's a red flag. Do not join a house. I mean, not that it's a bad thing to be recruited, it's actually an honor to be recruited, but you do not have to rush into a decision before you've actually gotten a chance to know these people. Your drag family should be someone or several people who feel like a family to you. So I would say a red flag is if someone's trying to recruit you before they even know you as a person, if someone wants to be your drag mom when they themselves have only been doing drag for less than 5 years, or if someone's trying to adopt you as their drag child through the internet and you've never met them in person, or alternatively, if you are someone who does drag and someone is messaging you, reaching out, asking to be your drag child when they've never met you in person, that's a red flag. Drag family is, like I said, much more than just a name or prestige or trying to attach yourself to your favorite queens. It should be an actual family relationship, and if it is not, that's a red flag.
Now, Venus, have you ever experienced criticism as a woman in the drag scene, and how have you handled it?
I have experienced criticism, but not from anybody whose opinion actually matters. I've always been nothing but loved, accepted, and welcomed by my local drag community, and I've been loved and welcomed and accepted into other drag communities as well, in drag spaces. Really the only criticism I've received for being a woman and doing drag has been through the internet, and specifically through anonymous messages, comments, asks, things like that on the internet. Outside of, like, the occasional negative TikTok comment or the occasional, like, I don't use anonymous message websites anymore for this reason. But outside of the occasional, like, Reddit thread or meme comment, no, I haven't really gotten any kind of backlash for being a woman in drag. And I think part of that is because I know that I do drag well. I'm not, like... And how do I describe this without sounding, like, judgy? I'm not just, like, going out in my regular street clothes and a pair of, like, wispy Ardell lashes calling what I do drag and then talking about how oppressed I am for being a drag queen and using, like, drag language that's appropriated from queer people of color. As long as you're not, like, being a nuisance and as long as you're not being offensive, people won't see you as a nuisance and people won't be offended by you. At least not the people who matter. And by the people who matter, I mean people who are in the drag scene, people who do drag, people who are queer people involved in queer club scenes who are not just, like, you know, 14-year-olds on the internet who just learned what a drag queen is and want to gatekeep it.
So talking about the internet, social media, were you... surprised at all by how much you essentially blew up on TikTok and the following you gained? If so, what surprised you, if it did?
It did surprise me. I'm actually surprised that I have followers on any of the platforms that I do. Like I said, I was popular on Tumblr back in the day, but Tumblr was unique in that you can't, the only person who can see your follower count is you. So, like, I had a decent following, but it probably wasn't, like, a whole lot, and, like, other people don't know how many followers you have, so no one treats anyone differently. So, I mean, I was happy that I had that following, but I earned most of that following for who I was before I did drag. So once I started doing drag, I kind of phased out of using Tumblr as much, And when I made an Instagram account for my drag, I wasn't really like expecting it to blow up. Like, I wasn't really like making an Instagram account with the intent of, I want to be popular and famous. I made an Instagram account with the intent of, okay, knowing that I'm in college and what I'm majoring in specifically, let me go ahead and separate my drag from my like day-to-day person. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really expect my makeup to be as popular as it was, but I built a following on Instagram, then started using Twitter, and very, very quickly gained a following on there, and then made a TikTok. And I made TikTok before it was cool, like, not in a hipster way, just, like, in a, I was using TikTok, like, fun of you for using TikTok, like, pre-pandemic. Yeah. And I was surprised by how much I blew up on there, but at the same time, I can't really be that surprised because there wasn't a whole lot of drag queens using TikTok. There was like Minnie and Tank and Carly and Geographic, who I don't know if she does drag anymore, but there just wasn't a whole lot of drag queens on TikTok, especially like not AFAB drag queens. As far as I know, I was the first one. So although I was surprised I blew up on there as much as I did, and for the reasons that I did, it wasn't like too far-fetched for me. But what I was pleasantly surprised by was the fact that TikTok itself blew up, and that because of TikTok's popularity now, and because I was on it before a lot of these other queens were on it, and I've maintained the following that I have, it's really opened a lot of doors for me and for my drag, and I'm really, really grateful for it.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Thanks. I know there's been quite a few artists in general that look up to you. We recently spoke to another drag artist that is on TikTok, and they did mention you and Apollo, so they were very pleased that we had talked to you guys.
That's nice.
Talking about Mock.
Yeah, Mock Bastard.
Mock Bastard.
I love Mock.
Mock was so cool. Bastard. We talked to them last week.
Mock has been blowing up on TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, literally could just post a video of themselves just, like, staring at the camera or walking, and people will eat it up.
Yeah.
That's so true. That's awesome.
It's so good. I love the when he was like, my favorite is when people just comment, nope.
And, like, that's very much how I started, too. Like, I would just be, like, doing regular trends. Like, my videos weren't even really about me doing drag. It would just be me looking like this, doing regular TikTok things. And people would be so either shocked or many times disgusted by the way that I look that that's kind of what helped me blow up.
Nice. Hey, it helped you blow up, right?
So. Apparently Mock terrifies people.
Oh, yeah.
And they thoroughly enjoy it.
All right, Venus, this is more getting into more of like a personal question. So a story you feel is most important to you that you would like to share.
A story that I feel is most important to me that I would like to share. I always like struggle to like answer this one because there's been like a bunch of like little things that I think were like really important and like really cool moments for me, but it's none of them are like a full story. I guess, like, one example of this that I can share is after about 6 months after I started drag. So, like, you know, I wasn't particularly good, certainly did not have a following or anything yet. Danielle booked me to perform at Funky Monkey, which doesn't exist anymore, but it used to be this, like, drag-centric fine dining establishment on International Drive. And she booked me to perform on a cast that was all these beautiful transgender women who were all, like, you know, former Miss Continental, current reigning this. They all had several crowns. Everyone was absolutely just drop-dead gorgeous. And they were all big names, like Sassy Divine and, like, Tasha Long and, like, all these amazing people. And I was, like, really surprised that she had booked me, a baby drag queen, to perform this gig, but I was honored and I was not about to turn it down. And she was like, oh, by the way, it's New Year's Eve, so it's going to be 5 numbers. It's going to run in rapid succession. All the songs are going to be on one track. It's a nonstop play. And I was really, really nervous, but somehow I managed to pull it off. And in the audience, because although this happened at night, this was a restaurant, so it's an all-ages show. In the audience, there was one little girl and she was wearing a Cinderella, like, Disney princess dress, and she had her tiara on, and I was thinking, like, oh, these are probably tourists. But this little girl was so into the drag show. She was snapping her fingers. She was tipping. She was, like, yes, queening us, and she couldn't have been older than, like, 8 or 9. That's and I just thought that was so sweet and so cute. And then after the show, we did a meet and greet. And this little girl comes right up to me and goes, are you a girl? And I said, yes, I am a girl. And then she said, you're a girl and you're a drag queen. And I said, yes, I'm a girl and I'm a drag queen. And then she said, that's good. I'm glad you're a girl because I'm a girl too, and I want to be a drag queen when I grow up. And that just made me so happy. Oh. And then later on, talking to this mom, they actually did not just come from Disney. In fact, they were looking for something fun to do because they kind of lived in the area. They can't afford to go to Disney. But their little girl is obsessed with Disney princesses and with drag queens and with all things sparkly and beautiful and glamorous. So they took her to this dinner as, like, their big family outing. And it just made me, like, so happy that I was able to, just with my own, like, presence, make this experience so special for that little girl, especially when, like, all things considered, I was the person on the cast with the least to offer. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, a really beautiful moment.
That's awesome. Wait, how long ago was this?
This was years ago. This was probably, like, 5.5 years ago.
Do you ever think maybe in the future she would, like, might recognize you or bump into each other? How cool would that be?
That would be really cool. I don't actually know if they, like, live in Orlando or if they, like, drove to get here. But it would be so cool if she did grow up to, like, do drag. Because, like, I was just at Austin Drag Fest, and they had queens there who were, like, 12, 11, 10. Wow. And they were up there killing it. That's awesome.
Nice.
That's cool. That's awesome.
Magical things can happen.
Yeah.
I love to see that, too, because it shows supportive parents. Like, it shows people that it might not be as bad to come to their parents, because some might surprise you.
Yeah.
What would you say the top 3 struggles in your life have been?
The top 3 struggles in my life. Honestly, I lead a very, like, happy life. I'm very grateful for the life that I have. I can only really think of, like, one thing that is, like, the number one major struggle in my life that has led to every other major struggle in my life, pretty much. And that is surviving the shooting at Pulse Nightclub. That was the single worst night of my life, and I don't think any night in my life will ever top that for how horrible it was. And, on one hand, I'm, like, grateful that I don't think I'll ever have an experience that bad again. But on the other hand, that experience has left me with PTSD, and that is still something that I kind of, like, live with and struggle with. It affects me in my day job. It affects me in drag. I am getting professional help, and I have been medicated for the past, like, year and a half or so. But I think that living through that experience was probably the hardest, well, not probably, was definitely the hardest thing in my life. And then living with PTSD since that night, the past coming on 6 years, has been the second hardest part of my life. And then other than that, I think the only thing I've, like, struggled with was just, like, being a child and not fitting in, which, like, I know that's the story behind, like, almost every single person who grows up to do this. But I was a very painfully shy, very awkward, not well-liked child, just because I was strange and I had strange mannerisms and I dressed weird and I looked weird. And I didn't really seem to understand the social cues that everyone else understood. Like, I felt like everyone else, like, got a manual, and I just somehow did not get one. So growing up was, like, not fun, but then after I discovered, like, alternative fashion, I kind of then reveled in the fact that I was not the same as everybody else and embraced it. still embracing it. I am a weirdo. I am socially awkward. I am shy, and I'm good with all that. So I no longer view that as a bad thing. Time, but
that is actually good to be aware that you're okay with that, because some people take it to where they can't do things because of that, or it holds them back all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm well aware of how I am. One thing, I know we talked earlier about like auditioning for drag television shows. One thing that kind of put me off of auditioning for drag TV shows for a long time was that I have built a fan base online, and I have like fans who like my personality and like my humor, and I would be, or not would be, I am terrified of one day ending up on TV and my personality not matching the carefully curated personality that I have online, because it's very different online versus in person, and I would just be afraid of people not liking me anymore. Not that I think I'm like a bad person, I'm not rude, I'm not mean, I'm not off-putting, but I'm afraid of people thinking I have no personality.
Mm-hmm. That's so hard, because you want so much to open up to people about that.
And there's nothing wrong in this world with loving drag, possums, and stripper mice.
Yeah, stripper mice.
Nothing wrong with it at all. I got flack for the stripper mice video, which, by the way, I did not make them. I don't do taxidermy myself, beyond just, like, finding dead bugs outside and bringing them inside. But I got flack for it because it's taxidermy, but I only purchase ethical taxidermy. I only buy from taxidermists who use animals that are already dead.
Their card specifically says that, too, that they're animals that were so already gone.
And out of all the things to get flagged for, like, come on.
Some people look for things to yell at you about.
That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess on one hand I understand, like, perhaps I should have, like, put trigger warning dead things on the front of the video, and you know what, next time I will. But that's just, like, you learn and you live and you learn.
Yeah, that's true.
They may be dead, but they're very full of life.
Yeah, they are.
They're very lively.
All right, Thetis, what would you say are your top three proudest moments you've had in your life?
I would say one of my top moments was winning Miss Lady Comedy Queen, because that was like my first ever pageant that I won. Another high moment for me was competing in Entertainer of the Year Femme, because that was the first like large-scale top five national pageant I competed in ever. And I came in second alternate in the national pageant, first alternate in the primary. So that was another like really proud moment. And I did that pageant with Danielle. That was actually the year that she won Entertainer of the Year. And I helped her with her package, and I was part of her presentation, and it was all like just really great and wonderful and magical, and it was like a great bonding experience for both of us. So that was probably my second proudest moment. And then my other proudest moment, this isn't like one moment, it's kind of like a moment that happens sometimes, is every time I receive a message from someone, usually like a young AFAB person, telling me that I've inspired them to do drag, or that I made them realize that they can pursue drag. That's like probably my whole, like my proudest moment period, is like every single time that happens.
That's awesome.
That's always nice, because you've given someone the courage to do something that they otherwise wouldn't have. Alrighty, so we're almost done. Give us a reflection on where you are today and what your future looks like to you.
Well, where I am today, I probably said this like three times, I've been doing drag for 6 years, so I feel like I'm far enough into my career where I'm certainly not new to this. I'm not like, I wouldn't say I'm a seasoned professional, but in the 6 years that I've been doing drag, I competed in multiple national pageants. I'm a current title holder. I've done local drag competitions. I've been to DragCon. I've built a following for myself on social media, and I'm actually like really proud of everything I've accomplished with my drag, even just like as it pertains to like finding my own style and perfecting my and perfecting my makeup and everything. And I'm really proud of where I am right now as far as like the future of drag. If I never advance farther in my drag than where I currently am, I'd be content, I'd be happy, I'd be fulfilled. But ultimately, I really, really would love to get to a place where I can do drag professionally as my sole career, because I do drag professionally now, but doing a couple gigs a month and the occasional out-of-state gig does not pay the bills. It just pays for all of this. So ultimately, I'd really like to get to a place, whether it be with my social media following or through being on television, or maybe just by catching a really good break locally and being able to, like, you know, be the headliner of a venue or something. I would really love to be able to just be able to focus on my drag and be able to show my face out of drag on the internet and be able to stop living a double life and really be able to give my full self into my art. I would really just, like, love to be able to do that. That is my ultimate goal with drag.
That would be awesome. We're looking forward to see where your future goes.
Thanks.
Now, Venus Envy, any last words you would like to share with everyone?
I feel like I have to choose these carefully. This is like a big responsibility.
It's a pretty big responsibility.
Responsibility. I guess my last words would be support local drag. Follow me on social media at Venus Envy Drag. And also, if you see a possum on the side of the road who has been hit by a car, please keep in mind that although it may appear dead, it may not actually be dead. Oftentimes they play dead, which is actually known as playing possum because of their tendency to do this. And if you do see a possum on the side of the road who is playing dead, please move it safely off of the road. And if it is actually dead, please be sure to check the pouch, because oftentimes there might be baby possums inside who did survive, but they won't survive if you leave them on the side of the road.
I did not know about the pouch.
PSA.
That's awesome. Well, again, thank you very much, Venus Envy, for being a guest on the show and taking your personal time out of your day to come chat with us.
And of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And everyone else, have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.